Don't let diaper rash come between you and your baby. Diaper rash can be one of the worst experiences your little one has to go through. Keeping their delicate skin healthy and happy shouldn't require a spatula to apply thick and goopy treatments that can be just as irritating and uncomfortable. When my oldest was little, she would get the worst diaper rash. It left me feeling so desperate to help her while also wanting something gentle on her skin. Dr. Mom Butt Balm is a pediatrician-approved skin protectant free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide. It was developed by a mom who is also a doctor. When she couldn't find any traditional products that worked for her baby's persistent diaper rash, she let nothing get in her way. You can use just a small amount of Dr. Mom Butt Balm to help soothe your baby's skin and feel confident that you are making the right choice. Dr. Mom is committed to providing an ultra-premium formula for moms that won't settle when it comes to their little ones. Soothe and restore with active ingredients being dimethicone and petrolatum. You can find more about Dr. Mom Butt Balm at drmombuttbalm.com or find it on Amazon or walmart.com. Hello, hello. You are listening to the VBAC Link and we have our friend Shannon from, are you in England? Where are you?
England, yeah, and in England. Cambridge.
Okay, see, I'm so glad my mind is remembering. You're in England and you guys, she's recording. It's quite late there. She's such a gem to stay up and record and share her VBAC after uno, dos, tres, cuatro, four.
Three.
Or three, sorry, three. Her fourth, yes, her fourth was a vaginal birth. Three, uno, dos, tres. I can't even pretend that I know Spanish. Let's be honest. So three, you guys, after three cesareans, and we know that in our community, this is definitely something that people want to hear. People want to hear these stories because it's harder to find the support and they want to hear what people are doing, how they're navigating through, where they're finding support and what they're doing to have their vaginal birth after multiple cesareans. So we're excited, Shannon, for you to share your stories today. We do have a review of the week, so we're going to get into that and then we'll dive right in. Okay, so this is from Morgan E and it says, I'm not alone, which I love that title because women of strength, you are not alone. This community is so incredible and we're all here for you. It says, this podcast has provided so much comfort for me in coping with my unplanned cesarean and now planning for VBAC in March. The transition to motherhood has been somewhat lonely for me since most of my friends are not mothers and hello, pandemic. So this is a little bit ago, right? Says, I am also an inspiring doula and feel so encouraged and spurred on by these ladies and their work. So thankful I stumbled across this group. Oh my gosh, it says, us women really are strong. I love that. Us women really are strong. I could not agree more. You guys, you are strong, you are capable, and you have options. If that is not anything and everything that we talk about on this podcast, then I'm doing it wrong. You need to let me know on your next review. So as a constant reminder, if you wouldn't mind leaving us a review, that would be so great. You can leave it on Apple Podcasts, Google, or even email us.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional.
Hi guys, Megan here. I'm not sure if you knew, but I'm a vaginal birth after two cesarean mama myself. Preparing for my VBAC was tough due to the lack of evidence-based info back then, along with where to find it. Which is why I, along with Julie, created this podcast and our signature course, How to VBAC. The course is self-paced, so you can watch it whenever your kiddos are sleeping or even at school. It's filled with evidence-backed data, tips, and advice to help you go after the birth you want and achieve your VBAC. You can find the link to the course in the show notes today or type in the browser thevbaclink.com/vbac-class.
Okay, Shannon, uno, dos, tres, three, I'm saying it correctly now, after three cesareans, you have had quite the different journey with each birth.
Yeah, I think that each one kind of taught me a little bit more, and I probably wasn't ready for a vaginal birth with my first three. So I think that while looking back on my journey, it's difficult. I think that it led me to where I am today. So
me too. I mean, right there. Amen. I love birth and I've always loved birth, but I do not think that I would be here right now with you today if it weren't for my experiences.
Yeah, I think the same. I'll get into where I am now when I'm when we're after my fourth. But yeah, I think that had it not happened the way it did, I wouldn't be where I am now.
You are so, today. Yeah. We grow and we learn and we inspire. And here you are sharing your story. So let's talk about baby number one.
Okay, so I was 19 when I had him. I just kind of assumed that he was going to come out that way. He was going to come out vaginally. It was going to go well. There were going to be no complications. And it didn't turn out like that. So I was due end of May, and it got to, I think I was about a week overdue. And I went into the day unit here. Mm-hmm. So it would be where you would just go if you were having concerns that were slightly more than you'd go to your midwife for. Mm-hmm. But not enough that you would need to go to the labor ward for.
It's like an in-between?
Kind of, yeah. It's obviously different here than
it the is, system yeah,
you have over there. Yeah,
yeah.
So here you have a midwife that's assigned to your GP surgery, like your doctors. Mm-hmm. And they are usually who you see throughout. It's supposed to be a continuous midwife, but you can chop and change. And right. You don't see that midwife usually in the hospital. So you deliver with someone completely different.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you don't get that continuity of care in labor. So I went to the day unit because I was having some hip pain. It was really difficult to walk. Mm-hmm. And because I was overdue and I was already booked in for an induction, purely because I was overdue, they brought my induction forward. And I think I was 8 days overdue when I went in.
Okay.
Was induced. I had the pessary induction and it worked pretty quickly. It worked within about an hour and a half. And
oh, wow.
they didn't believe me. They told me that it couldn't happen that quickly.
Well, it's not super normal, but it can happen.
Yep. Sent my husband home and left me to labor on my own for about 3 hours before they examined me. And I was 5 centimeters. Which is when they take you over to labor ward.
Labor.
So I got wheeled over and called my mom and my husband. Then it's kind of a bit fuzzy. I don't remember a lot from his birth. I remember that they broke my waters and there was meconium.
Okay.
They put the monitoring clip on his head.
The FSC, the fetal scalp electrode. Okay.
Yep, they put that on. And I was managing fine on the gas and air, but it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, gas and air over here.
Yeah.
And it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and they told me that the anaesthetist was going home, and if I wanted an epidural, that was my last chance. So I felt pressured. So I got the epidural, all stalled from there, didn't move off the bed. I think I got to 10 centimeters at 10 o'clock the next morning, so I'm now 9 days overdue. Pushed, nothing happened, wheeled me to theatre. So I think I started pushing at 11 and he was born at 12:30. So lunchtime.
Yeah.
And he was a big baby. He was 9 pounds, 13.
Okay.
So that was that. I recovered and didn't think anything of it. 18 months later, we decided to have our second and I fell pregnant, I think, within the first month. So it happened quite quickly.
Yeah.
did my research, wanted a VBAC. I actually got signed off for a HVAC. So it was all going well. Yep, all going fine. And then I got to 32 weeks and I panicked because my mum is already in childcare and she lives about an hour away.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how quickly I would labor because I'd never labored spontaneously. I didn't know what was going to happen.
Right.
So I booked a routine section and that was booked for, I think, 39 weeks. And then at 38 weeks and 3 days, I went into, again, the day unit because I'd had reduced movements.
Mm-hmm.
And they put me on the monitors and his heart rate was quite erratic. It wasn't settling. It was either quite high or quite low. And there was no like middle ground. And I think they put me on there for about 4 hours and they just weren't happy. So they brought my section forward to the next day.
Now that when I read your note, I'm like, I don't know why, but that got me.
Yeah.
But baby's heart rate is that erratic and they're that concerned. It would be that day. That'd be then.
Yep. But they were happy for me to go home and come back the next day.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like conveniency it seems, I am not going to say, but it seems like it was more of like, well, this is already going to happen. So we'll just make it convenient tomorrow. And we'll give you this as in a good reason why to validate it.
Yeah. No, I agree now. Looking at the time, I don't think I thought about it like that.
Of course not. No.
Yeah. But after going through, because with my VBAC, I went through a lot of what had happened before. I definitely think that it was that a case of they kind of didn't want me to come back and with more reduced movements and just kind of sit there. So because the section was going to happen anyway, they just kind of thought,
mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's move it up.
Yes. So then he was born at 38 and 4. So he was 10 days early and he weighed 8 pounds, 11. So again, he was quite a good size.
38 weeks, yeah.
So then we decided to have a third, and it took us a long time to get pregnant with her. It took us 14 months, which that was our longest kind of conception. Our first one was, I think, 4 months and then a month. So it took a while. And she was due the 11th of April, 2020. And I got to, I think it was about 30 weeks when kind of talk of the pandemic was kind of rolling in.
And,
mm-hmm. Yeah. And we were like, oh, it's fine. We don't need to worry about it. And then it kind of just all blew up. I had to go to midwife appointments alone, hospital alone, scans, because I had to have growth scans because my babies are big. And everything was fine. I did want a home birth again with her, but they kept me waiting. I wasn't signed off until about 37 weeks. So they kept me waiting a long time to sign me off for that. But it was all signed off and we were good to go. And I was feeling good despite the pandemic because we were in lockdown by the time she was due. Mm-hmm. I think lockdown was called a month before she was born. Lockdown here for the first time was called on the 23rd of March and she was born on the 23rd of April. So I remember I went into hospital and I had a growth scan at 40 weeks and she was absolutely fine. No issues. She was measuring fine. The water levels were fine. Placenta looked good. Gave me a sweep and sent me on my way and said, oh, I don't think I'll see you next week. You'll have this baby by the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't happen. Got to 41 weeks and I went back for another routine growth scan. And I remember going in the car on my own, obviously, and I felt good. I thought that they were going to say that everything was fine again and that they were quite happy for me to just carry on.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't go like that. I should probably mention that my hospital's policy is that if you haven't had your baby by 41 and 4, so 41 weeks and 4 days, they either induce you or they give you a section. Mm-hmm. And that's their policy. I had this growth scan at 41 plus 3.
Mm.
So I went in, had this growth scan, and I was on my own, didn't have any support. And it was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And she scanned me. And in a week, my placenta had aged, it had calcified, and it was failing. Mm. So those were the reasons she gave me that she needed to get my baby out the next day. She gave me the pre-op swabs, she took my bloods and basically told me to come back the next day at 11 o'clock. I had no time to prepare. I had no time to research. I had no time to ask any questions. It was, this is what's happening. You're going to do it.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah, basically.
And was baby's heart rate struggling or if like...
No, she was fine.
She was fine.
She was fine. There was no reason at all.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes. So then it was a mad dash to, because I'm the only driver in my house. My husband doesn't drive. Mm-hmm. So obviously having a section means that we can't go anywhere.
Yeah. And so during the pandemic on top of all of it.
Yeah. So it was a mad dash that night to kind of get enough food in, because delivery, like house deliveries, were unicorn dust. You couldn't get one. So to get enough food in, I had to arrange childcare with my mum. Otherwise, I was delivering alone. And again, she still lives an hour away in a different county. So we weren't sure what the rules were, because here you weren't allowed to cross county lines.
Oh, no way.
Oh. Yep. So it was difficult. She did come up and she did look after the boys. And I did see her before I went in to deliver, but I didn't see her again until baby was 6 weeks old. Like, she had gone home by the time I came home. So that was difficult. But I went in and I think I got to hospital at 11 o'clock, called down to theatre at 2, and baby was born at 3 minutes past 3 in the afternoon. She weighed 9 pounds 4, so she was again a good size. And I got back to the recovery ward. My husband stayed with us for an hour and then he left and he wasn't allowed to come back. So I was still had my catheter in. I was still numb. My phone was dead and I was just left because I couldn't get anything. Every time you had to call a midwife in, they had to put new PPE on and it just took so much longer. I didn't get wheeled around to the actual recovery ward until about 1 o'clock in the morning. And they admitted to me they'd forgotten about me. Like, I was just in this room on my own. Yeah, so they wheeled me around to recovery. Still had the catheter and that didn't come out until 7 o'clock the next morning. So I was bedbound with this new baby and they came around and took my observations and my temperature was raised, which is normal after a section. But I was told that I might have COVID, that my baby might have COVID. I would need to be separated from my baby and we wouldn't be allowed to leave the hospital for 3 days. No, honestly.
Oh, I am feeling very frustrated for you right now. And very saddened. And yeah, I feel a little raged inside of, like, because this shouldn't have happened. Like, these things didn't need to happen to people.
I know. And the more that I talk to other people who have had babies during the pandemic, it's not unusual either.
No, it's not. And it's maddening.
It is. It's strange now to talk about it without either filling up or actually crying, because it's taken me a long time
to process
to get to this point. Yeah. So she said she'd come back in an hour. And I remember, obviously, I had my catheter in, so I didn't have to, like, get up and go to the toilet. I was just down in water trying to get my temperature down. Mm-hmm. She came back at 4 and my temperature had come down because I didn't have COVID. And it was a strange experience. There were 6 beds in this ward, but I was on an end bed. And then there was a woman diagonally to me. And then there was a woman 2 beds over. And that was it. There was no one else there. It was eerie. Mm-hmm. And it got to the point where I couldn't do it anymore. So 26 hours after my baby was born, I discharged myself and I went home. I was not staying in there any longer. So even after that, I got home and I spent the first week in tears because motherhood wasn't new to me. She was my 3rd baby, but giving birth during a pandemic was a completely different experience. I don't know what it's like over there, but here you have a midwife check at day 3 and day 5. And then you get signed off at day 10 by the midwife. And then you get sent to a health visitor who then looks after you until your baby is about 5. And then they go to school. So,
wow, I like that. We do not have that. We are just told, we'll see you in 6 to 8 weeks and see ya.
Oh.
And then you just go home. And yeah, I mean, it's very different for a lot of home birth people, but that's kind of how the hospital is. It's like, we'll see you in 6 to 8 weeks and we'll see you then. That's
interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's not great.
No. So yeah, so day three and day five, I had to go to a clinic. They usually come to your house.
But they probably
especially
weren't
if you've
coming.
Had a section. Especially if you've had a section. But because of the pandemic, I had to go there and being the only driver. My husband
couldn't even
drive
after having a C-section, really.
Not really. Luckily, my husband can drive. He just hasn't passed his test. So we had to stick the L plates on and we made it there, but it wasn't great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, went and did that. We do have a 6-week check. It's with the doctor. That was over the phone. And then you get introduced to your health visitor. Normally they come to your house. Again, that was over the phone. And then that was it. We were just left. No one met her until she was 6 weeks old. She was the first granddaughter, because I'm the oldest and my husband's an only child. So she was the first granddaughter after two boys. No one met until she was 6 weeks old. Spent the first week in tears just trying to process everything that happened. It was a difficult time. And after that, we said we didn't want another one. So I just kind of locked it away somewhere and didn't deal with it. And then we decided to have a fourth. And I had to come to terms with it. So this is the reason why I'm here now. So I had found out I was pregnant in October 22. And it was a difficult journey to get my V back. It was the biggest fight that I've ever had to do. When you find out you're pregnant, you contact your GP surgery, and then you are assigned a midwife. Midwife that I had this time was the same one that I'd had with my third pregnancy, but the first appointment she was actually off, so I saw someone completely different, and she was horrible. I only live 9 minutes from the hospital. I know from listening to your podcast that that's like women travel hours.
Way far. Yeah, like to other countries sometimes even.
Yep. But 9 minutes was too far for them. And she said that 9 minutes was too far. The paramedics might not get to me in time. If I bleed out, I'm going to die. If baby gets stuck, baby's going to die. Oh. I'm putting my birth experience over a live baby. And obviously, they know I care about the safety of my baby, but that's also their job. So I left that appointment in tears. So that was that was a great start. And it didn't improve from there, really. I then spent the next, I think your booking in appointment is at about between 8 to 10 weeks. So I then spent the next 30 weeks listening to your podcast, researching stats, risks, benefits, percentages. I lived, breathed, slept statistics for VBACs because she probably 99% is our last baby. We've now got two of each, so we don't need any more. so I knew that this was my last chance to get the birth that I wanted. Off the back of my booking in appointment, they referred me to the consultant midwife at the hospital, and she is kind of higher up than a community midwife or just a midwife on the ward, but not quite the head of midwifery. So she's kind of somewhere in the middle. I had a few appointments with her, and while it was beneficial, it still felt like I was banging my head against a brick wall because she wasn't listening to what I wanted. Every time I would come back with a statistic or a risk that she had, like, if I corrected her, then I'd just get like a, yeah, okay. Like a patronizing nod.
Oh, like, yeah, sure. You think you know what you're talking about, but you don't.
Yeah, kind of. And at this point, I was 28 and a mother of three, about to have my fourth. They were treating me like I was a child, or that's what it felt like anyway. Right. So I went to every appointment, knowing that that's what I wanted, reeling off my stats, my risks, my percentages, and told them I wanted a home birth. And they, again, weren't for it. They tried everything they could to get me into the hospital. We have midwife-led units, and we have the labor ward. And the labor ward is more for ordinary birth, like if you are going for the epidural and you want the more hospitalized birth, whereas the midwife-led unit is more of a hands-off. That's usually where the birth pool is.
The more, kind of, yeah, natural, non, unmedicated versus medicated. Maybe is this like the two differences here?
Yes. Yeah. And as a VBAC after three sections, normally there would be no way on earth that they would have signed me off for the midwife-led unit. I was too high risk. However, to get me into that hospital, they signed me off for the midwife-led unit.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was the option that they gave me because I was close enough if there was an emergency, but I wasn't too far away. Like, if I was there. So it was their, that was their trump card.
Okay. Okay.
So I still said no. I still wanted my home birth because that hospital was the one that I'd had my daughter at during the pandemic, and I did not trust any of them after being lied to by the consultant and coerced into having that third section. I just didn't trust them to do what I wanted.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, pardon?
I said it makes sense to not, that you didn't feel completely trustworthy, that they were completely trustworthy.
So, then I got to 36 weeks and I had a routine midwife appointment at 36 weeks. And I walked into the room and my midwife was there, but so was the head of community midwifery. I wasn't told she was going to be there. I was ambushed. And she basically said to me that, I have it written down because I made a post at the time. She said that basically my baby would die if I carried on with my plans to home birth, that there was a risk of shoulder dystocia, hemorrhage. They would both result in death. A delay in the pandemic, in the pandemics, the paramedics getting to me. So that would be death. I didn't want a cannula inserted as routine at hospital. So that would be a risk factor. I have a high BMI. So again, that goes against me. And they said I had low iron because I was refusing blood tests. And so that, again, that was something that went against me. I was told that if I hemorrhaged and lost around 2 pints of blood, that I would die, that my veins would have shrunk, so they wouldn't be able to get a cannula into me. I was told that they wanted to send three midwives to my home birth, which they normally send around two, but for some reason they wanted three. I was told that my previous birth experience should be put to one side because it happened during COVID and it's not representative of how it is now. I was told that I was making the entire midwifery team twitchy.
The
midwife I saw at the first appointment, the one who made me cry, she was one of the ones that was on call, and they told me that if she was on call, would I go into hospital? And I said maybe. So in my mind, I'm thinking that they were trying to put her on rotation to get me into hospital.
Sneaky.
Yep. I was told that it's the head of community midwifery's responsibility to make sure I'm comfortable with the risks, but it's also her responsibility to make sure her midwifery team aren't traumatized by my birth. I was also told, they wanted my husband to be at the home birth assessment, as it's their responsibility to make sure he's aware of the risk of death so he's not traumatized.
Oh,
like I hadn't spoken to him about any
gosh.
Of this.
Oh, my gosh.
And they, on my way out of that appointment, my midwife, the one who had kind of supported me as best as she could, said to me that she can't wait until I give birth so that it's all over.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that was that.
Wow. What a way to feel loved.
I know. I came home. Again, I had to go to these appointments alone because my husband was at home with the three kids.
Right.
And my mom, again, lives an hour away. I don't have the support here. So I had to go to these appointments on my own. And to be faced with two midwives who were just coming at you with all these scary statistics, it felt like I was ambushed. And I think I sent an email then and complained, and I got this really lengthy email back, but it just was basically filler because it had happened already.
Right.
So my birth. She was due on the 1st of July, but I had always thought that she would be due somewhere between the 25th of June and the 28th of June. And I remember the 27th of June, I needed to go and get new brake pads and discs put on my car. It was the last thing I needed to do. And I was sat in the mechanics, like feeling a bit uncomfortable, like a lot of pressure. And I was, I think I was about 39 and three at that point. And I was just really uncomfortable. And I sat there for about 2 hours and I was just like, ugh, why is this taking so long? I just kind of
just ready to move on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My husband, then the next day, my husband went into the office and I remember messaging him saying, I think you should have stayed at home today. Something just doesn't feel right. I just feel a bit off. And then I woke up on the morning of the 29th of June and I had hip and leg pain, which isn't unusual for me. I've got hypermobility syndrome, so my joints are kind of extra bendy anyway. So to wake up with pain is quite normal, especially in pregnancy. It was 7:30 in the morning and my husband thought it would be a really good idea to ask me to cut his hair for him. So 7:30 in the morning, 13, nearly 40 weeks pregnant, I was just like doing his hair. And then I felt a twinge and I was like, don't recognize that pain. I'll keep an eye on it. Anyway, they turned into contractions. So I had my first contraction at 7:30 in the morning and they kind of got stronger. And at lunchtime, I said to my husband, I think you need to sign off now. I think this is it. It's happening. I'm going for a bath to see if they kind of go away or if they kind of stay. We had a food delivery come in that day. We had an Amazon delivery come in and we had, I think the car seat base was coming as well that day. So in between my contractions, I was having to like answer the door, deal with all this stuff that was going on around me. So the contractions stayed and they didn't peter off. They kind of just stayed. And at this point I was on all fours in the living room, mooing like a cow, which is bizarre because with my first one, who was my only experience of like labor, my mum said that I was eerily quiet. So it was different to make noise this time. So my husband rang my mum and let her know what was happening. And then he rang the hospital and they told me that the home birth service wasn't available that day. So I'd have to come into hospital. It was only after he told them my name that that happened. So we'll leave that. We'll leave that just hanging there.
Yeah.
So then I burst into tears because I thought that as soon as I go into hospital, that's it. I'm not going to get my vaginal birth. They're going to find some reason to section me. And that was it. So my mum came and drove us to the hospital because she was staying here with the kids anyway. And I think I got to hospital at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They examined me and I was 4 centimeters, so I was allowed to stay. And they took me into the room and I stayed there until I had my baby. And I just labored. I don't remember a lot of it, to be honest. When they say that you go to another place,
you do. Place.
The gas and air was amazing. I did try the birth pool, but we had an issue here where they had to have like air vents fitted in the rooms with the gas and air, and they weren't done in the birth pool. So I was in the birth pool for about an hour, but I wasn't allowed the gas and air. And the pool was all right, but the gas and air was helping
better.
More.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I went back into the room with the bed. And even though I'd said to my husband, I don't want to be on my back, I was on my back for most of the time. It just, that's where I was comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in the pool, they couldn't, I'd said no to the continuous monitoring. I just wanted the intermittent with the Doppler and they couldn't find her on the, we didn't know what she was. So at this point we had no idea what she was, but they couldn't find her on the, with the Doppler. So they asked me to get out of the pool and put me on the bed and they were going to scan to see where she was. And I couldn't roll onto my back at this point. I was on my side and I couldn't roll onto my back to get them to scan me to see where she was. And then I opened my eyes and the consultant that had lied and coerced me into my third section was in the room and I specifically said, I don't want to see her. And she was stood at the end of the bed and she said to me, how long are you going to push for? And I said, as long as I need to, as long as me and my baby are safe. And she left. So that was the end of it. I didn't see her again.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, that was that. Anyway, they managed to scan me and they found her, and she was just really low. That's the only reason they couldn't find her. She was fine. She was happy. So it went on again for about, I think, another couple of hours of just moving from all fours on the bed to my back. And I remember sitting up on my knees upright, and I felt something go. I was like, okay, I think my waters have gone. And they had a look and they'd gone on their own. I didn't have to have them popped like last time. So they went. There was no meconium. It was all good. And then I remember spacing out again for a while, kind of going to that other place. And then I came to and it was burning. And that ring of fire is real. It was real. And I said, okay, it really stings. Something's changed. And the midwife lifted up the sheet and she went, oh, there's the head, quick. And they had to scramble to get everything they needed. And that was, I think, because my husband was texting my mum, so I got all the timestamps. And I think they saw her head at 3 minutes past 10 at night. And she was born at 14 minutes past 10.
Oh my gosh.
Just slid out, and we found out she was a girl, which my husband told me, which is what I wanted. And I remember saying to him, I did it. They said I couldn't, but I did it. And they didn't know, they wanted to get her a yellow hat because we didn't know what she was, but because she came out so quickly, they only had a blue one. So she's got a little blue hat.
Aww.
And she was here, and it was amazing. And I did have 2 second degree tears. They did only repair one. And I wish they'd repaired both, because going for a wee afterwards with that open one was hell.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun.
I would take that over a section recovery any day. I was going to the park with the kids 3 days post birth. I was walking around the house. I was able to go up the stairs. It was amazing. So yeah, I did it. They told me I couldn't, and that I would die or she would die. But
they really put up a fight and tried so hard. And let me tell you, I don't necessarily know the right word, stand up to that, type of pressure. Oh my goodness, that is hard. That is very, very hard. So the fact that you did, and you, I mean, it's not like it didn't affect you, right? Of course it affected you, but you were able to go and you're like, listen, I know the research. It's in my favor. I'm okay. I'm making this choice because I'm I really have researched it and truly believe that that's the best choice for me and my baby. And they just tried so hard to not let that happen.
They did. I remember, crazy. I think it was the next morning, and I was just sat in my room with my baby, just quite happy. And the head of midwifery came into the room, and I had met her once before. And she said to me, she was like, oh, well done. You did it. All our phones were going off last night because it was flagged that you'd gone into labor. And we were all waiting to see what happened. But you did it vaginally, and we're all so proud. Well done. I was like, yeah, well, you didn't tell me that at the time, did you?
You're like, I wish you would have been cheering for me my whole pregnancy and not making it feel like I was crazy, or that I was scheming my husband, or, you know, all of that. Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
You have gone through a lot on top of your births and trauma fair and recovering from all of that. Like, you have grown so much and achieved so much. You should be really proud of yourself.
I am. And I think that, like I said at the beginning, if it hadn't happened the way that it happened, I mean, I'm going to train to be a doula in May and June.
Yay!
Because I don't want other women to go through what I went through. So like I said, if it hadn't happened the way that it happened, I wouldn't be here today. So I'm grateful for the experience, but I wish that I'd had more support, I think, at the time.
Right. Totally. I mean, that's definitely something that led me to the doula journey. And obviously here where I'm at too, I think through these birth experiences, it's hard to deny that fire inside of you when you feel it, right? Yeah. And you're like, I want to help people not have the experience that I had and have a better experience to the best of my ability. And I'm sure that you will do it, and you're going to take this passion and you're just going to flourish and touch so many lives. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's talk about VBAC after a 3 C-section. I think this is sometimes a hard one because we do have providers just throwing out things like blank statements, like if you hemorrhage, if this, you and your baby will die. And when we hear those things, it is very scary, very overwhelming. And when it comes to VBAC, more than two, okay, so when it comes to VBAC after multiple cesareans and more than two, the stats are harder to find. Did you find that it was harder to really find? There's not a lot of like huge like Cochrane studies, at least that I know about, where they have studied VBAC after three, specifically cesareans. And so we are often told by providers that the chances of uterine rupture are just astronomically higher than, you know, our typical VBAC or VBAC after two cesarean. So for people in your area in England, what did you find local study-wise, like for your stats? Like, I'm curious to see the two difference. Do you remember?
I remember I had to kind of collate as much information as I could on VBAC after multiple cesareans, because I remember them saying to me mm-hmm. that after two cesareans, the risk of uterine rupture doubles. And when they say that to you, you're like, oh my god, that sounds really scary. But what they don't tell you is that it only doubles from like 1% to 2%.
yeah.
So I think that there's not much here that's different, because there really isn't a lot. There was no support, especially not from my hospital or anywhere like that mm-hmm. for me. I kind of just had to do it on my own. The internet is your best friend.
Yeah, I know, right? This darn internet can be your best friend and your enemy at the same time. And so that's why we're here, right? And why we have our blog and all the things, because we want people to be able to find that best friend side of the internet and really dive in. And so we do have a vaginal birth after three cesarean blog, and it's kind of titled, is VBAC after three C-section the right choice for me? We'll make sure to have it here in the show notes. So definitely check it out. But in it, we kind of talk about how uterine rupture makes the idea of VBAC very scary. The word itself, rupture, very, very scary, right? When I think of something rupturing, it doesn't look pretty. And it's something that we want to talk about in its reality form. Uterine rupture happens. And when it does, it is typically an emergent situation. However, it doesn't happen very often. And when we're talking about VBAC, the world feels like, and I'm talking about world like other countries too, they make it feel bigger than it is, like you were saying. So, you know, it happens in really like less than 1% of people. And so they're showing that with VBAC after multiple cesarean, it might be slightly higher, around 1.2. And so, you know, to like 2%, right? And so it's just so hard. And what I think is unfortunate is that it's not being offered enough to show the real stats. But what this podcast and what Facebook and all the groups out there, the VBAC groups, are showing, that VBAC after three cesareans is possible. It is possible. Do your research, find the support, and you did it with, I mean, I'm going to say you did it without support. Like, I mean, you had support like within your husband's stuff, but like, I mean, they were to the fact that they were just showing up at the end of your bed. Well, how long are you going to push for? You know, that type of stuff is not combined with the support definition for me anyway, and ambushing you and those things. I mean, you got through it without that much of support backing you up in this decision. Yeah. And that is where we are shy here, is I think anyway, is that we don't offer the support. So one, if you're listening and you're a provider and you offer VBAC after three cesareans, please let us know so we can chat with you and get us added to your list. If you've had a vaginal birth after three cesareans and you're listening and have had support, please message us so we can add your provider to the list, because VBAC after three, four, you know, all the cesareans may not be the best choice for everyone, but for those who want it, let's try to get the information out there and read up, get the information. Like I said, it's going to be in the show notes and our blog. We have our course, and there's not a ton out there on vaginal birth after multiple cesareans. So find what you can, read what you can, find the stats, and do what's best for you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.